Okay, welcome to Chapter 7, Wireless Technologies. So what we're going to cover today is primarily the components of a wireless LAN, some amount of security, and a few other things. Now, so far, whatever we have done is to do with wires. Yeah, we have LAN cables, RJ45 jacks, and so on. But along the way, these days, a lot of us are going wireless. Now, the benefits of this are obvious. You know, you have less cost in cabling, and it's far more convenient. I mean, you can sit on the couch and do stuff. But as with anything, there are things to watch out for in wireless. So, let's just do a quick poll amongst us. Okay, so how many of us actually are working on wireless networks? You just speak up because we're a small class. How many are using wireless?
I am.
This is Swarna.
I am.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Swarna, go ahead. We know you by now.
So, I also use wireless during the office when in Wi-Fi we connect, and I think for telephone and all we use.
Wonderful. Wireless. Yeah, so everyone's, I think most of us are using wireless.
Yeah, now, this is Suresh here.
Now.
Yeah, Suresh, go ahead.
I use mobile to connect my laptop, and also at office I'm using Wi-Fi.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. So, the way wireless works is that it uses parts of the electromagnetic spectrum, primarily radio frequency, you know, the RF spectrum and infrared spectrum, to carry radio waves. Some parts of the spectrum can do it, some parts can't. We are not going to go into the physics of how this works, okay? But it's a lot of fun if you do go into the physics of radio waves and so on. Okay, because you have long waves, short waves, some waves are suitable for something else, and so on. Okay, now you have in your notes, you're going to have some description of different parts of the spectrum. You have gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet rays, visible light. Now, remember one thing. These are wavelengths, and you don't have to worry too much about it, but the way this kind of thing works is just like the way you have waves on a beach. I mean, you can think of electromagnetic waves almost in the same way. Somebody correct me if I am wrong. And the wavelength is basically how long are some of these waves. They're all measured in meters, and then you get a lot of exponents here, which you can safely ignore. Now, you have infrared, yeah?
What'd you say the wavelengths was measured in? The wavelengths is measured in meters, millimeters. Did you say that? I didn't quite catch that on my end.
Yes, it's measured in meters, yes.
Yep, just making.
All right. So the first thing they cover is infrared, which is also wireless. How many of you have tried playing with infrared gear? You know, you have... it used to be very popular at one point for connecting laptops to modems and connecting two laptops together and so on. Just type in the chat if you want to speak, if you have had any experience with infrared.
So I assume nobody has used infrared.
Just a minute. Swarna, what have you seen during your college practicals?
I was doing my engineering degree, right? So we used to have that prism. Like the light passes and we have to see it through the fringes formed during the experiment through the spectrometer and all. So those days I have seen the 7 fringes which it forms and which color it is actually, the layers. Those things I have seen during my college. I was sighted during my college, so those days.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Yeah, but how about the use of infrared devices? You ever used a television remote control, anything, anybody ever used? We are not touching Bluetooth right now. Bluetooth is a completely different wireless technology.
Yeah, we have made that remote car during our college practicals, project remote cars.
Those infrared or radio frequency? I don't know. I haven't used a remote control car for the last 20 years, I think, or more.
They're radio frequency.
They're radio frequency.
Usually
They're not infrared.
Yeah, so infrared's usually your television remote controls, your stereo remote controls, and then your remote control cars are usually around 27 megahertz or so, depending on the remote control car and what crystals are in it.
Okay, that clears that up. The thing with infrared is it's line of sight. That's the critical thing to remember. So line of sight means the infrared receivers, okay, and transmitter have to have no obstacle between them, which is why it's used for very short range stuff. It's almost like having a cable. Now, coming to radio frequency. Radio frequency is the advantage of radio frequencies, some other parts of the RF spectrum is that, okay, you can penetrate through walls, no obstacles, you can go through obstacles, so you can have things like a wireless keyboard, which you can sit out in the couch and work while your computer's in the other room, or even wireless headphones. Now, some of you are using Bluetooth. Bluetooth does do some of this too. Let me check the notes. 2.4 gigahertz. Okay, that's what I think even a lot of cordless phones use the same band. Okay, one to many preferred method for IR connecting peripherals over infrared. How many of you have had a Bluetooth keyboard or a Bluetooth mouse and have connected your mobile phone using the same dongle? That'll be a one to many scenario, a very common one to many scenario, which is what I used to have at one point till I got tired of Bluetooth pairing issues, but that's a different story. Okay. Now, Pradeep, describe your experience, please. What is same?
So actually, when I'm using N79 with Bluetooth connection, that time I was trying to use 3G connection. BSNL 3G connection is there. So that time I was using, but signal is not that much correct. Suddenly, it will break up. Suddenly again I have to reconnect. So hell, a lot of issues are there. So again I stopped using. Now I'm using via cable direct.
No, that's okay. Okay, let me clarify this. Bluetooth, what I mean is your laptop's paired via Bluetooth. Okay, that's the short range part. And you're using 3G. That's different. What I'm saying is, have any of you used multiple devices with a single Bluetooth dongle? So, like you have a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse, or a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth phone. That's why it says one-to-many communication. That's what it is. Okay, wireless communication includes, okay, it's got a whole bunch of stuff in the diagram which I can let you go through. The thing you need to remember about wireless is that different frequencies are licensed in different countries, which is why you'll have stuff that's, if you buy from the US, if you buy wireless hardware from the US, or if you buy wireless hardware in India or in Australia, they could be using different frequencies, and you need to be a little careful about this. Usually in India it's not such a problem, but in other countries where you have very strict monitoring, you need to be very, very careful. Okay, so we have activity time. Okay, so let's see. You need to decide whether it's infrared, radio frequency, IR, RF, Bluetooth. Okay, so first option IR, second option RF, third option Bluetooth. So, everyone ready? I hope so. Zoe checks her email at the airport. Type answers into chat, please. Okay, IR, RF, Bluetooth. Yeah, so far so good. You're on the right track. Suresh, what about you? Is it gonna be IR, RF, Bluetooth? Type answer into chat. Yeah, okay. RF is correct. Okay. Sheldon wears his earpiece so that he can talk hands-free on his cell phone. Don't we all love doing that? Ha ha ha. Yeah, this is Bluetooth. Okay. George and Cleo sit side by side at the park playing internet chess on their PDAs. This is a tricky one.
Yeah, it's going to be IR, and then the clue in the question is they're sitting side by side. Okay, Suzanne's CD player is in her bedroom. She wears cordless headphones to listen to music three floors down in the basement. Yay!
Hey, I want her cordless headphones that work three floors down in the basement. I've never seen a set like that. It must be a special Cisco one.
Must be, because that's...
Possibly.
Yeah, that's good.
And it is going to be RF. It is... hang on, somebody wrote Bluetooth. Okay, sorry RF, changed your mind. Not bad, Pradeep, not bad. Pradeep, why not Bluetooth?
Sir, I think Bluetooth has some less, only 10 meters or something like connected is there. After that, it will break. So it won't come much distance.
Yeah, essentially, yes. And I think what determines this is, some level of the frequency and also the wavelength. So and someone correct me on this, but the shorter the wave, the longer the range it has.
No, the other way around. The longer the wavelength, the better the range. The shorter the wavelength, the more likely it is to follow line of sight. Remember, the shorter the wavelength, the higher the frequency. Therefore, the more likely it is to be line of sight. The longer the wavelength, the lower the frequency, the more likely it is to bend around the Earth and stuff. That's oversimplified, but that's essentially how it works.
That's the easy way to put it. There's a little bit more technical explanation, but that doesn't need to go here.
Okay. Unless somebody's particularly interested. Frederick buys three new wireless devices to attach to his desktop computer at home. Sure. Well, okay. I think I get this. Anybody else except for Swarna? No. You have to give one answer. Sorry, Suresh. You have to give one answer only. Swarna, why Bluetooth? Why are you answering Bluetooth?
Because this seems to be one-to-many connection.
Precisely. Well done. It's one-to-many. That's the giveaway. Okay. Dominic changes the channel on his TV with a remote. Now we know who's sleeping in class. Yeah, okay. So nobody's sleeping, as far as I know. Good. Next one. Helen's new cordless phone uses the 5.8 gigahertz range. Yeah, it is RF. Okay. So the next section deals with the benefits of wireless technology, which we sort of discussed briefly, which is... primarily two of them. You have a cost advantage when it comes, and you don't have to run cables everywhere. And the other thing is you have scalability. It's very easy to scale networks. You just stick another access point in and plug it in and get more range on the network. Now, let's discuss the limitations, because these are important. Okay. First problem, the wireless spectrum is unregulated, so you have a lot of congestion, in the spectrum at this level. So you've got everything running, your cordless phone, wireless microphones, keyboards, everything's using the same 2.4, 2.8, 5.8 gigahertz kind of band. Okay. And Carrie, was it you who mentioned the microwave interfering with the television, or was it somebody else?
It wasn't microwave interfering with the television, it was microwave interfering with a cordless headset. Sean has that problem, and microwaves can also interfere with wireless networks.
There you go.
Yes, they can. I have it happen sometimes.
Okay. So, that's your microwave ovens, basically. They have the same frequency. Okay. Security. This is my favorite concern. Look, when you have a wire running, you can pretty much lock down the wire. Okay, you have cable closets. You can put them under lock and key, so you have a level of control. But wireless is, well, anytime, anywhere, right? It's instantly available. So anybody can pick up the signals and do whatever they want. And you'll be surprised as to how easy this is. Has anybody tried what's called wall driving? And wall driving is basically you're driving in a car and you have your laptop switched on and you're checking what wireless networks are available. Or, you know, you can do this in a Mumbai local train. You know, you're sitting and then if you have space to sit, I don't recommend this, okay? But if you have space to sit, and I know people have done this, you switch on your laptop and just see what wireless signals you catch as you travel. Okay? And you can connect to those networks and do this. This is not legal in many jurisdictions, nor is it in India with the IT Amendment Act. Okay, that's why you use encryption, okay, and authentication. We'll come to these in much greater detail in Chapter 8, I believe. Okay, the other problem is, of course, interference, as we discussed. Okay, wireless networks and their boundaries, wireless personal internet networks, WLANs, and wireless wide area networks. Ooh. So, it's... Okay, now, they have defined boundaries and... But the thing with radio waves, okay, in general, is they are susceptible to what happens even in the temperature. So, which is why once upon a time in the winters, I used to get BBC shortwave very clearly. And it wasn't so in the summer because temperature, humidity, anything can interfere with the radio wave, okay? You're living between two houses and the signal could bounce off and be very clear, or if you're surrounded, then you get poor signal coverage. Yeah. Was that a question? No? Okay.
Well, your signal coverage also depends on your antennas, too. But I think that comes up, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It does. And how you place your antennas... You know, where you align them, what you do with them. We will come to antennas. I have this very interesting picture of me. We used to have this earlier on, you know, before satellite and cable TV with antennas, where you would stand on the terrace and somebody would shout down, "Are you getting the signal?" And this used to be the television tuning. And people would be moving the antenna around all over the place. WPAN as the smallest mice, keyboards, and so on, printers. Single host usually use IR or Bluetooth. WLAN, which is what we are most familiar with, IEEE 802.11. So you've got B, G, and N, I think. Has 802.11N become official yet? I'm not sure if it has. But you're getting a lot of gear with that. All your modern gear is with 802.2n technologies. Okay, many users...
I believe...
They use access points.
I believe 802.11n is official over here in the States, because there's quite a bit of gear that's out with it. And you missed A, by the way. 802.11a, which I don't think is used anymore. Yeah. So it doesn't matter, but it is there.
It is there, yeah. WWAN. Ooh. Okay. These are the example of WWAN. They have very wide area. They cover a very large area. And one example they've given in the notes is cell phones. And they use things like GSM or CDMA, code division multiple access. I have a lot of material on GSM and CDMA in case somebody wants painful detail about this, because I had done a summer project and that was on forecasting as to which technology will do what. But that was an interesting one. So anyway, okay, you've got rain, speed applications. We're not really going to go into this. Okay.
You might want to cover at least the range.
Okay.
Because that would be something that may be on the exam. I can't remember.
All right. Let's cover the range. WPAN. Bluetooth V2.0 EDR. Speed 3 Mbps only. This is so slow. Range short. Applications peer-to-peer, device-to-device. Yeah, we know this. Enhanced data rate is what EDR stands for. I'd forgotten this. WLAN. Okay, as we had already covered, standards 802.2a, b, g, n. Hyperlan, Hyperlan 2. I haven't heard this one before. Speed 1 to 540 Mbps. Yep, 540 Mbps. I've never seen a 540 Mbps over wireless before. Range medium. Application home, small business, enterprise networks. WWAN. Standards, GSM, GPRS, CDMA. Speed, 10 to 384 kbps. And watch, okay, everyone, watch your case here when you're looking at these units, okay? This is capital K, small bps. Okay, watch the units, be careful. Because this will be a fantastic exam question to trip you up in units. I don't know if it's there, but if I was setting the exam, I would trip you up in this. Range long. Okay, application, PDA, mobile phone, cellular access. Speed and range are constantly increasing by newer technologies. That is so obvious. Okay. Okay, so we have another activity here. Classify the scenario as WPAN, WLAN, or WWAN. WPAN, WLAN, or WWAN. Yes, I got that acronym right. I don't believe this. Charlene uses the IRDA port to connect her PDA to a laptop to upload files. Type your answers into chat. Please type the abbreviations in full, everyone.
Don't ask me any questions. I'm grabbing antihistamines.
Oops. I hope you weren't stung by something. Wireless equivalent privacy, but we're not going there right now. That's for the next
wireless
chapter.
Wireless protected access. No. That's security.
Oh, sorry.
WEP is your wireless equivalent. What's the last part of it? WEP is your wireless equivalent
privacy,
protocol,
I think.
Or privacy. Something.
Protocol. No, privacy. Yeah.
Privacy.
WPA is something else. But never mind. It's security related and we use it all the time. Okay. Everybody else, WPAN, WLAN, or WWAN. Charlene uses the IRDA port on her laptop to connect, on her PDA to connect to her laptop to upload files quickly. It's WPAN, as a few of you have pointed this out. Okay. Not WPA, WPAN. That's important. Don't mix abbreviations for shortcuts. Natasha calls her friend Carlos on her cell phone. Don't we all do that? Some more. Okay, I'm going to stop this activity here. Are there any questions? Because I'm getting very few answers. What's the problem? If you have a question, type into chat. Yeah, I heard the word config. Okay, let me clear this confusion. WPAN are small networks. They're personal, usually between you, your desktop or laptop, and peripheral devices. Okay? That's a personal network. WPAN, that P stands for personal. WLAN, wireless local area network, is, you can think of it as medium range. This is how you extend your wired local area network. Okay? That's your medium range. This is where you have an access point or a wireless router. You know what we typically call a wireless router. That's actually an access point. And you connect your laptop to this in the office. You can connect your cell phones to this. You can connect your iPod to this or anything else you desire. Okay, that's what we usually experience. The third thing is WWAN, which is this wide area wireless network. This is your cell phones, typically. These wireless networks cover very large areas. Okay. So that's the terminology. And I'm going to move on to question three. Let's see if we get any better answers here. So this activity tells you what it is asking is whether the given scenario will be a WPAN scenario or a WLAN scenario, or a WWAN scenario. Trishna uses her laptop to check her email at a wireless hotspot. Okay. Okay, Pradeep, why WWAN?
They're using wireless network through Wi-Fi, I think so. They're checking the emails. They're not using local area network, something like that. So that is the reason I typed.
Suresh, why WLAN?
Because he's connecting to the internet, which is available locally, and I think it's WLAN.
Yeah, it's a wireless hotspot, and that is WLAN. WWAN is much bigger than that. That is citywide or countrywide kind of a scenario. That's why not WWAN, it's WLAN. Okay. Bert uses a wireless Bluetooth headset to listen to music from his MP3 player. Yeah, it's WPAN. It's personal, it's a headset. So yeah, we're good. Jim connects to the wireless network in his school to do research on a new technology. No, this is not WWAN. It is still WLAN. A school is not big enough. WWAN is, you're talking about mobile networks, which are huge. The school is not a phone provider or something like that. It's still LAN. You are still in the same building. One administrative control. Okay, this is interesting. Raghu uses his cell phone to view a web page on the internet. Yeah, I think we're getting it finally. This is going to be WWAN. Okay. Okay. Now, there is a bunch of stuff here on wireless LANs. Okay, this is what we encounter most frequently. They are administered by the IEEE. There have been four amendments. 802.11a, 802.11b, G, N. Okay. These are called Wi-Fi or wireless fidelity. That's another way, collective way to refer to these technologies. At the time of this writing, 802.11n is not ratified. We think it is ratified now. That's something you can check. That'll be good. It is ratified. Brilliant. There we go.
2009. Yeah, 2009. Oh, okay. It was ratified. If you check Wikipedia. I know Wikipedia is not the best source, but it is a good summary. You can go look somewhere else if you're not sure about Wikipedia.
Good enough. Okay, so the Wi-Fi Alliance is another organization that's responsible for testing wireless equipment. So it has the Wi-Fi logo on it. It means it can interoperate at the specified standard with other equipment. Okay, we have a Linksys router here via Wi-Fi connection. Okay. Now, the interesting part here is, forget the router, but you have this whole list, I think, of standards and characteristics, which is something you'll probably need to know. 802.11a, 5 gigahertz out of spectrum, not compatible with 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. That's pretty much everything else, 802.11b, G, or N. In just 33% of everything else. Relatively expensive to implement as compared to other technologies. Increasingly difficult to find, obviously, 802.11a equipment. 802.11b. First of the 2.4 GHz technologies. Maximum data rate of 11 Mbps. Now, this is where the range figures come in. 46 meters, which is 150 feet, indoors. 96 meters or 300 feet outdoors. 802.11g. Again, it's 2.4 GHz. Maximum data rate increased to 54 Mbps. Same range as 802.11b. Backwards compatible with 802.11b. Okay. It has support for 5 GHz. It's the latest wireless standard. Extend the range and data. It's backward compatible. We don't know the precise numbers, but this is something we should be able to look up now because it has become a specification. Okay, 802.11 release date, 1997. Frequency, 2.4 GHz. Max, 2 Mbps. 802.11a. Frequency, 5 GHz. October, 1999. Max, 54 Mbps. Maximum range. That's the data rate, and range is, maximum range is 50 meters. 802.11b, again October 99 is the release date, frequency 2.4 GHz, Data rate max 11 Mbps, range 100 meters, 802.11g, released June 2003. This looks recent. Frequency is the same, 2.4 GHz. Data rate max 54 Mbps, maximum range 100 meters, 802.11n. Release date, this is the draft approved 2007, but as Kari said, it's released in 2009. Frequency 2.4 or 5GHz, max 540 Mbps, 250 meters. Okay, so what are the components in a wireless LAN? Okay, you have the client, you have a wireless client, this is the guy who connects, or what they call an STA. An access point, a wireless bridge or an antenna. Okay. So, typical wireless clients, laptops, even your cell phones can connect to Wi-Fi, keyboards, printers, mice. So not so much keyboards, printers, mice, but yeah, laptops, cell phones, some MP3 players too, in the adaptive space. Which was this one that I think the Plextalk has support for streaming Daisy, Plextalk Pocket or something, so that can connect to Wi-Fi, I think. Well, that's something you'll have to see.
Plextalk Access and point. BookSense, yes.
Ah, yes, Plextalk and BookSense, yes. Okay. Okay, so the wireless access point, well, this is important. This controls access between a wireless and a wired network. So what it does is you have an Ethernet cable going in at one end and you have your radio waves coming out the other end, which allows you to connect to wired networks. Okay, so you have a LAN in an office, you get some more space, you stick an access point somewhere and broadcast. A lot of us have probably done this. Brian, what's your office situation? Is it something like this?
Yeah, I do have, I have it now set up wireless. It's a little bit smaller space now, so it'll definitely work this time. And yes, it is just the access point, and I have it hooked into a switch so that way it will work with the server, because I don't think it'll connect direct to the server. But that's another story.
Okay. It's taking, it acts as a media converter. That's your access point. It takes the Ethernet frames and translates them into the 802.11 frames. Okay. They have an 802.11 frames. The area in which access points support wireless connection is called a cell or a basic service set, BSS. This is in your notes. Wireless bridge. Now, this is important. It's used to connect two wired networks through a wireless link. Okay, that's a bridge. So you have two wired networks, you're connecting them through a wireless link. Okay, long-range point-to-point connection between networks. You typically see these in offices, but the other place where I have actually used, there's a couple of other places where we use bridging, which doesn't have too much of a connection to any of this, but one is if you're connecting an access point or a router to your service provider modem, it's best to bridge the two. Oh, wait a minute, we have a question.
They cannot understand the access point. So,
the access point is, it's a media converter. What that means is, it's going to pick up your data from the wire, which is your your Ethernet cable, okay? It's going to convert that to radio waves, okay, your wireless spectrum, and send those out. Now, once they go out, because communications is two-way, it will receive radio waves and convert them back into the wired Ethernet frames and push those back onto the wire. Okay? So is that clear? Reply in audio.
Uh, Pranav, I am not able to understand, like wired and wireless, you say, right? Which one happens to be wire? If I would be obliged if you can explain me with an example.
Okay. So, let me give you an example. Okay, let's try this. I have an Airtel connection at home, okay? Or in my office. I have an Airtel connection in my office, which is, the cable comes into the office, and I have a DSL modem router connected to it. Now, what I want to do is, this connection, let's say, is valid in, half the building, and I want to get... Now, what I'm able to do is that as my business expands, I want to give internet connectivity to the other half of the building. So, I have two choices. Either I can run a cable and put another switch in the network, put it up, put it on the wall, etc., etc., or I can go wireless. Now, my network is the same. I have the same Airtel connection. I don't want to buy a second connection for the other half of the building. So what I do is I extend the range of this connection. The only thing is I use wireless. So what I do is I have a wireless access point which I connect to this network. Okay. So this wireless access point is like any other device, any other client. The difference is what this client does, it relays the packets that are on my current connection, it pushes them out through wireless after it's converted them to wireless, so that my computers in the other half of the building can then connect to this wireless network and exchange data on the same network. My connection is the same, my network is the same. The only thing is I have a device in the middle which is taking the signals on this network and converting them to radio waves so that we go wireless. Is that any clearer, Swarna?
I'm clear now. I understand.
Okay. Now, using the same example, let me explain a wireless bridge. So let's say I have an office on two floors. And so far, I was using separate connections. One floor had one connection, one floor had another connection. What I do for cost saving is I say that, okay, I will have one big connection with one big pipe. One big, huge amount of bandwidth. And I got a lease line, a 6 M, 10 Mbps, a 2 Mbps lease line, or something like that. I have it on one floor. Now, I want to connect. Now, I have separate wired networks and I don't want the hassle of recabling everything and so on. So what I do is I put a wireless bridge between these two networks so that my wired connection can be shared with the other wired network. So I put a guy in the middle who connects these two networks. Okay.
I have a good example.
You have one set of wired machine. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I have a really good example. When we were moving from the upstairs unit to the downstairs unit, we had internet in our upstairs unit, so I set a wireless bridge up in the upstairs unit, and then when I moved to the... I could use the internet in the upstairs or the downstairs unit because of my bridge. And that way, until the internet got moved, I had connectivity between either unit.
Yay! Which will be very handy if you're changing flats in the same building.
I will.
Could be. If it's powerful enough. Did somebody have something to say? Okay. Okay, we come to antennas. What would we do without them? They're used on access points and wireless bridges. They increase the output signal strength. They receive signals, of course. Increase in signal strength from an antenna is known as the gain. So, the antennas are these long things that stick out from wireless devices. Has anyone managed to break an antenna on a stereo system? I have actually done this. These telescopic antennas, I've managed to break them. I wouldn't recommend that. It's harder to do on access points and so on because there's these single bits of plastic and they don't move. The typical home grade equipment is what I'm talking about. Higher gains usually translate into increased transmission distances. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the telescoping antennas are rather easy to break. The metal, or the little metal ones, yes, they're fairly simple to break if you do it right. Especially at the very ends of them. But that's not for this lecture.
Yes, well, but just as a side note, they can be broken. On your wireless access points, by the way, you can actually remove antennas and replace them and so on. In fact, if somebody has a WRT54G, a Linksys WRT54G, you'll see all kinds of antenna replacement options on the internet. Okay, antennas are classified according to the way they radiate signals. So they're directional. So directional ones concentrate the signal strength in one direction, and omnidirectional amplify signal strength in all directions. Okay, so directional antennas are, because they can concentrate the signal, they can send it over long distances. So that's why they're used in long distance transmissions. On access points and the equipment we will usually encounter, you have omnidirectional antennas. Okay, you have a Linksys WRT300N router in this image with multi-directional antenna with multi-directional antennas. Okay. Okay, we have an activity here. But before we do that, does anybody have any questions? Think about it for a minute. We've gone fairly quickly through this, so think about it. Okay. Now, what you need to do is you need to match characteristics with the wireless network components. So you have, you know, it says WLAN components, that's the heading. So you have bridge, access point, antenna, client. Okay, bridge, access point, antenna, client. These are your three bridge, access point, four things, four components. And I give you a characteristic, and you have to tell me what component matches with this characteristic. Also known as an STA. What will this match with? What's known as an STA? Bridge, access point, antenna, client. So I'm going to leave you to chew over this, because this is something that probably could be asked.
And I believe it was asked on the discovery exams when I took the course.
Yeah, anybody else besides Swarna? Okay, STA is the wireless client, is the, wait a second, do you have an access point? Anybody else? Anybody problems here, what's going on?
Looks like we're having internet connectivity problems over in that area.
Looks like it. Okay, it's not the access point. If I got this correctly, it's the wireless client. Correct, Brian?
Yeah, it's the client. And I think the reason they use the abbreviation STA is because I think they also call it like a wireless station. So, not
yeah,
exactly
wireless
a good,
station.
Not exactly a good thing, but that's why they use the STA abbreviation for the clients.
There we go. Converts, okay, the next point, next question. Converts Ethernet frame type to 802.11 format. Anybody else? Ooh, what's happening? Okay, wireless access point is correct. Okay. Third, increases the strength of the wireless signal. Alright guys, come on. I only
come
see one
on,
answer.
Yeah.
Well, it is antenna. Okay. A mobile device that can participate in the wireless LAN. That's the next one. Now, I need full terms, guys. Don't take shortcuts. Wireless tells me nothing. But it is a wireless client. Okay. Allows long-range wireless communication. Allows long-range wireless communication. Anybody else? We only have two respondents. Okay, bridge is the right answer. Wireless access bridge. Pradeep, why is the bridge the right answer? Why not wireless access point? I'm curious, why did you write wireless access point?
So actually, I think it will. I think bridge is the right answer. Access point wire written is with that communication is it's a point to get the communication, but I'm not sure. I just make guess work.
No. It's going to be the bridge. It's not. See, the bridge allows for long range communication. Okay, you have wired networks. You interconnect them, which is how you can get long range. Okay, anyhow. Controls, next one. Controls access by wireless clients into the wired LAN. Anybody else? Okay. But that is the correct answer. And the last question. Receives the wireless signal from SDA. Suresh, I don't know what Clint means. Well, the answer will be wireless client, because it's receiving the signal from the station. The station is your access point. It's a little strange, but there it is. Okay, we move on from here. Anyone, any questions before we actually move? Brian, how are we for time? How much of the chapter is left? I haven't had a chance to check.
We have about 35 minutes left. I'm not sure exactly how much is left on this either.
Okay. Anyway, the next thing we're going to cover is something called the SSID, which stands for Service Set Identifier. These are the names that you see when you on your network or cell phone, when you search for wireless networks. Do you see the SSID names? That's how you know. So the SSID, what it does is it distinguishes one network from the other. Because remember, all of you are using the same spectrum. So how do you know which network is which? Now, I will cover this in Chapter 8 when it comes to security, whether you should keep the SSID broadcasting, not keep broadcasting, etc. There's always an interesting little debate that rages. But anyway, the whole deal with your SSID is this is what identifies a network. So if you have Suman's network from Suresh's network, you need to have different SSIDs. Okay. One of the biggest problems I've seen with these SSIDs is when you get equipment, they have a default SSID. You see, that really complicates matters, because you'll have something called Linksys router as an SSID. And you should always change your SSIDs to something else. These are 32 characters long. If you need devices to communicate in the same LAN, they should all have the same SSID. Okay. Now, so much for the SSID. Now, there are two ways. We come to something else now, which is ad hoc and infrastructure mode. There are two ways in which wireless networks are set up. Okay. So, what happens here is, if you have a peer-to-peer connection, okay, without an access point, the network is an ad hoc network. So your laptop, my laptop, and maybe somebody's cell phone connect all together without using an access point, it becomes an ad hoc network. Okay. All clients within an ad hoc network are equal. The area covered by such a network is an independent basic service set. I have never seen these terminologies used anywhere else except this course.
Usually what you're going to see
IBSS.
Usually what you're going to see is your SSID, or in some cases you'll see your BSSID, I believe, which is your basic service set identifier. But other than that, some of the other ones they use.
Yeah, I have seen this. It's in enterprise documentation when you're setting up like point to multi-point bridges and stuff. These guys aren't likely to see it, but I have seen it.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen too many enterprise bridging documentations either, but fair enough. Okay, Swarna, you have a question.
Yeah, I was going to say, Swarna's got a question.
I just wanted to know, even if the devices are connected through wireless, like it's not necessarily wired, like as you told, it's called ad hoc. In case even if they are wireless connections, then also it's called ad hoc?
Yeah, it is wired. It is wireless. That's why it's ad hoc. It's a wireless network which does not use an access point. They just connected one wireless device to the other. So that is ad hoc.
It's basically, yeah, as I say, it's basically like doing your peer-to-peer networking. It like what Chapter 3, your Chapter 3 lab 3.1.5, just with wireless and not having the cables involved.
Yeah.
I would liken it to,
that's it.
Do you guys have traffic cops? It's a bit like where you have people crossing at a crossing a road, and if it's ad hoc, they just cross when the lights, you know, when there's no traffic. But if you've actually got like a traffic controller, that's a bit like having an access point, because there's a bloke that tells them when they can cross or not, or a girl that, you know, points when they can cross or not. I don't know whether you guys have that over there.
Oh, we do. We have we have all kinds of cops, including traffic cops. So we've got those. And they love finding you, but that's a different thing altogether. It's not a one-sided story.
Yeah, the point to ad hoc is that because there is no access point controlling access to the wireless network, the cards get to fight it out amongst themselves. And it's easier to set up, but it's less efficient because the cards have got to take care of when they can transmit and not. And that's why you have an access point, because it's more efficient.
Okay. Infrastructure mode. Larger networks need a controller. As Kari said, it's more efficient to have an access point. Okay, access points take over who can talk and when can they talk. Okay, when does the data exchange happen? And most networks that you will see will have an access point. Okay, now we move on, and they've got some interesting diagrams in here. So the basic service set, okay, is the smallest building block of our WLAN. The area of coverage of a single access point is limited. You can expand this area by connecting multiple access points through a distribution system. They call that a DS. Okay, and this forms an extended service set, which, unsurprisingly, is abbreviated as ESS. Okay, each access point in an extended service set is in its own basic service cell, okay, BSS. Now, in order to have smooth movement between the different cells that you have in such a network, you need to have an overlap of about 10% so that the client can connect to the other cell and switch smoothly. So the client can connect to the second AP, it's got a signal, you're moving, and as you move closer, it's the second AP that takes over from the first AP. It's almost a bit like when you move from city to city, you know, in the car, and you cross state boundaries and you switch cell providers, or even in one city as you move from different cell phone towers. It's something similar to this. Mostly, you see, you know, a single access point with the BSS, but where you have a very large installation, that is where you're going to see all these extended service sets, multiple access points. Okay. You have an activity where you set the SSID. I recommend you try this at home, but be careful. Okay, we now come to channels. Okay, this is similar. These channels, the wireless channels, are similar to television channels. Okay, because you need a way to divide the spectrum into different sections so that you can have, you know, individual conversations being carried across that particular spectrum of radio waves. Is everyone okay so far? Any questions before we go to channels? Okay, I'll take that resounding silence to be a yes. Now, the thing with channels is, okay, some frequencies overlaps, okay, and as I said, different countries have different rules, so channels can be set differently. You can set these channels manually on your routers, on your access points. You can set them automatic. Usually, I have left them in automatic. I haven't tried too hard setting them to manual and seeing what happens. But that's up to you. You can try manual setups and see. But remember one thing. If you have, let's say, your wireless access point on channel 13, everything else that has to connect to it should also be on channel 13. Okay. Normally, you have most technologies using single channels, but otherwise, some of the newer ones can use multiple channels, so you get more bandwidth. You've got... Okay, now this is where things become even more interesting. Because it's difficult to detect frequency overlaps on a wireless network, you don't know when collisions take place. So you use a method to avoid collisions in the first place. Okay, you eliminate the problem at the source. Have we covered collision domains, Brian? Collisions and so on, we have done it somewhere, right?
That was chapter 3 or 4.
3? 4.
Yeah, 4, I think.
Where we did collisions. Yeah. So does everyone remember collisions in a wired network? Oh, sorry, no. Oh, wait a minute. Do you still have a question? Or is that the previous chat I'm seeing?
No, I was just telling we have discussed this collision while we were discussing about the routers.
Yes, that would be one place where it would get discussed. Okay, so we have collisions also in wireless networks, and the access method that some of them use is carrier sends multiple access with collision avoidance. It's quite a mouthful. CSMA CAR, as my screen reader says right now, it's actually CSMA/CA. Okay. So what it does is, it's quite clever. It creates a reservation on a channel while a conversation is taking place, and while that conversation is taking place, nothing else can use that channel. So you avoid collisions. Simple. Okay. Now, the way this works is, if you need to have a conversation, the device needs to ask permission from the access point. Okay, you have a request to send. If the channel is available, it'll respond. The AP will respond with a clear to send that, okay, you can go ahead, send it, or a CTS signal, or message, sorry. Now, the CTS is also broadcast to all other devices in that basic service area, which tells them that, okay, this channel is reserved, don't do anything with it till I tell you. Okay. Now, once the conversation is complete, the device that has initiated the conversation sends an acknowledgement to the access point, which everything else also, all of the devices receive that acknowledgement so that they know that, okay, this channel is now free. You've got an interesting activity here where you configure the channels manually. Just be careful when you do it to make sure that whatever devices you have to communicate with that access point should be on the same channel, unless you're an automatic. Configuring the access point, this could be interesting. Now, mostly what you do is, when you configure these access points, if you have a wireless router, you log into the GUI, you configure the mode, you know, whether it'll typically be infrastructure mode, you configure. You leave the channels on automatic, and it's important to set the SSID and the security. Usually, these are the two items that you configure. Brian, do you want to add anything to wireless client configuration?
I think that's about it, yeah. Because the only thing you need to set on the access point is the SSID. You'll probably want to set a static IP address, because you can do that in there as well. And your security and the channel. And I believe that should be about all you would need to really mess with. But you can always play around with it and see what the other settings are.
Yeah.
Because there's always help available.
There's help, and there is, you can have mixed mode. So mixed mode is basically, you can decide, okay, do you want to enter in 2.11b, g, n, So these are typical ones that they have, and you can decide what you want there. Usually these days I leave everything at either automatic or I set it to N, which gives me the highest throughput. But again, it depends what devices you have. You've got some legacy devices, you may have to use mixed mode, which reduces the throughput, but it's not too bad.
Oh, the other thing you may want to change is the default password. I just thought about that.
SSID broadcast determines whether the SSID is going to be broadcast to all devices in range. By default, it's enabled. Okay, if you want, you can disable it. Look, the thing with SSID broadcast is, let it be on. It really doesn't matter. What a lot of people say is disable the broadcasting of the SSID and your network can't be found. That's a fallacy. It's easy enough to find it. It's easy enough to pick up the packet and get the SSID out of that. Don't bother disabling the SSID. Leave it enabled. Okay. Configuring the wireless client. All right. Again, it's a straightforward thing. You find the network you want, you click it, you enter any credentials that are required, and you're connected. You may want to play with channels and manually enter SSIDs and so on, or you may have to set the mode, but usually these are all just done automatically. Okay, that's... You have integrated wireless utility software that you see on most of your operating systems, whether it's XP, 7, whatever. You have something called standalone wireless utility software. That's the software that comes with your wireless cards. So that sometimes helps you to connect, and sometimes that gives you features like diagnostics or a better graphical representation of how your connections are. Like my dad's machine has had this Netgear wireless access adapter that had the software which would make noises, I think, when it wasn't configured properly or when it couldn't get the signal. It had these bars it would show you. So sometimes that makes it easier. Sometimes they have more features. Current strength and quality of a wireless signal. Profiles, if you have multiple wireless networks, one at home, one in the office, you can configure those. And I think you can do that now even natively inside 7. Site survey, this is interesting. Detect all wireless networks in range. You have to determine whether you set the hardware, the card software to do it, or you let the operating system manage the connection. The settings are buried deep inside. You usually don't need to play with them. Now, okay, so have we covered ping yet, the ping utility?
Chapter 4.
Yeah, so that's all the good stuff in Chapter 4. You want to verify connectivity, it's back to ping. So ping a destination, that doesn't work. Ping the access point to make sure that, okay, well, I mean, where is the connectivity failure? I'm just checking if there's something we have missed. Security considerations on a wireless LAN, as I have been saying on and on, I mean, since the beginning, because of the very nature of wireless, you have to secure the network, okay? You need to implement security. And, okay, they have a section here to say why people attack LANs, and it's really, in the real world, it really doesn't matter to you why somebody would attack you. But the point is, people do attack them. Some do it for fun. Some just say, oh, okay, free wireless, let's eat your bandwidth. Some want to log in and do nasty things. And worst case scenario, you could get a terrorist trying to exchange messages through your wireless network. See, the thing is, what you need to remember, and this may not be in the notes, but the thing to remember with wireless LANs is, you are responsible for the security of your infrastructure. So you can't say that, hey, I didn't know how to do this, and you know, because I'm a clueless user, security is not my problem, and if somebody connected to my network and did illegal things, the police will come to you. And this is true across the world, including India. Okay? To you. They'll find your IP and come directly to you. So you are the one responsible for securing your network. We have already discussed war driving. Okay, you can war walk. So instead of driving, you walk around. Now here, this is what they're talking about. The SSID and the name. You can you know, the notes say that it's public, you know, the fact the network is there is no longer public. That's not really true. You can use a whole host of devices. You can sniff a network. There are all sorts of ways of doing this. So disabling SSID doesn't really give you any real security. I don't know if the test is in the exam. You answer based on, if it's an exam question, you can answer based on the notes. But in the real world, it really doesn't matter.
It does if you're using wireless headsets and stuff. The fact that the access points aren't beaconing is going to give you less interference with your other devices. So you're right, it doesn't give you better security, but it does quieten things down, I've discovered.
Yeah, maybe there. But yeah, as we said, security, nothing much. Change default settings. I will continue saying this in this chapter. I will go on and on and on about this in the next chapter. Everybody knows the default settings, default passwords, default SSIDs. Don't give the information away on a plate. Change it.
And even if people don't know it, it's freely available on the internet. Go pick up a manual. It's right in the manuals.
Okay. Now, this is where the fun stuff starts. Limiting access to a wireless LAN. One way to do it is what's called MAC address filtering. So each device that connects to a network, now this is Ethernet, okay, basic Ethernet, will have a MAC address, never mind wired or wireless. What you do is you tell the access point that, okay, devices with only a, you know, this MAC address, and this MAC address can connect. Okay, you limit access because anything else with any other MAC address can't connect. Sadly, ladies and gentlemen, this is fairly easy to break. I mean, I can sniff packets, figure out, okay, these are the frames passing through, these are MAC addresses, I can spoof it. It's sort of a layer, it sort of helps, but it's not very strong security. Okay? And it's an administrative nightmare because you have to deal with MAC addresses, which are hex. Yeah, I think some of us had fun with hex and binary chapter 5.
To be fair, in the Linksys devices, you actually do get a list of MAC addresses that are trying to connect, and you just have to click on the right one. So, I agree it's annoying, but it could be worse.
Yeah. I don't know, I was, I don't know what they had there, but I was in Zurich, and they had to, some library for the blind or something, and they had to physically take our MAC addresses and enter them into something.
Yeah, that happens too. They do have some 802.1x authentication stuff, and you actually have to give them the MAC address and stuff. It's popular with places where they really do need, like conventions and stuff, where they do really need to control who gets on and who doesn't get on.
There you go. Okay, the other way is authentication. But we only have about, it's 8:21, so I've got 9 minutes. So very quickly, authentication is you allow entry onto a network based on a set of credentials. Okay, you use it to verify whether the device is trusted or not. It's common. You have usernames, passwords. You enter those and it gets connected. Okay, there are three types of wireless authentication methods, but I am not going to cover these now because this could take a little time. Okay. So we are going to stop here, unless anyone has any other ideas.
You can always look in your notes, and if you do have questions, you can always send us an email or catch us on Skype.
Yeah, do that. Look this up in the notes, because there isn't too much more in this chapter, but look it up, and we'll move directly to Chapter 8, unless there are questions next class.
What I'd be tempted to do was do a quick summary on authentication next. Less lecture, like a 2-minute summary, and go, there's this, there's this, there's this, there's this. Take the questions and then rip onto Chapter 8, so at least you've actually covered it for those who are listening from the recording.
Sounds like a plan. We'll do that. Yeah, they've got WPE, WO, wonderful. They've got encryption too. Well, read this up. It's not too hard. They're still doing basic stuff.
For you. This confuses the trop out of most students, but that's okay. This is basic to you. it does tend to be a little bit more of a challenge for people who are just starting out.
Not a problem. We will cover this next class. So catch us up via email or Skype. You get questions, we'll be more than happy to answer them.